Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to be with you here in San Francisco. I've visited your beautiful church a few times before, but this is the first time I've been honored to preach here, and it is an honor, and I'm enjoying seeing all of your faces. I want you to know that you are seeing something a little unusual. In fact, it's something that's happened only twice in the history of humankind. And I have to preface this by saying, you know, I'd heard all these wild stories about, you know, these crazy San Franciscos and all the things they did. You know, there's days where pretty much anything goes. And so I came out here and I thought, this is a pretty liberal place. But I was told that here in San Francisco, in the Swedenborgian Church, if you're a minister, you wear robes. And I was told this in no uncertain terms. So I want you to know that this is a not quite unique event. As a matter of fact, I have worn robes before. And it was on the day that I was ordained in 1996. And this is the first time since. So enjoy it while it lasts. Well, I came here to speak on a little bit more serious topic than robes and liberalism. I came here to speak from the Gospel of John, on the subject of what we're about to do this morning together, the taking of the Lord's body and blood. And the Lord was brilliant. He operated in a way that few of us can compare to, none of us really can compare to. He was an amazing preacher, and he was so good at reaching to where people were inside and dividing and teaching and showing what is the truth behind the appearance. What are we really seeking here? And in the fuller reading that I'm going to give you in the course of my talk with you this morning, we'll see Jesus dividing the people between those who could hear his message and those who couldn't. Now, you have to understand, as I said earlier, that Jesus had just miraculously fed most of these people who were listening to him. He had taken the five loaves of bread and the two fish, and he had divided them among 5,000, and they thought this was pretty good. You have to understand, these were mostly poor people. They may not have had a good meal. They'd been following him around. Where were they going to get the food? And so Jesus had just fed them with literal bread and fish. And that's where our scene opens. We have the crowd looking for him. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into the boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, "Rabbi, when did you get here?" Now, have you ever noticed how Jesus doesn't usually answer the question? People ask him one question, he answers a whole different question, because he's not interested in the external questions we're asking. He's not interested in how'd you get here and what bus did you take or anything like that. He looks right into the soul. So he answers them, "Very truly, I tell you, you are looking for me not because you saw the signs that I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill." So what's he saying here? Why are they coming? I may ask you a few questions that you'll actually have to answer along the course here, but I'll take you off the hook here. They're hungry. They're looking for, this is a guy who fed us. Hey, maybe we'll get another meal. That's where their minds are at this point. And he knows that. He sees into the hearts of all people. And he knows what's drawing the crowds. And he's going to sift those who will truly hear the message from those who will not. He says, "Do not work for the food that spoils, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. On him, God the Father has placed his seal of approval." And I feel very justified in giving this kind of sermon where we talk to each other, because this is the kind of sermon Jesus was giving here. Then they asked him, what must we do to do the works that God requires? Jesus answered, "The work of God is this, to believe in the one whom he has sent." So they asked him, "What sign will you give that we may see it and believe in you? What will you do?" Now, he's talking to them about spiritual things, belief and faith and this sort of thing. They keep going back to the bread. Listen to what they say. "Our ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat." Hey, give us some more food, Jesus. Then we'll listen to you. Then we'll follow you. He's not going to let them off the hook in that way. He has fed them literally. He's not an impractical person. But now he wants to lift this up to a higher level. Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is the bread that comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." Heavenly bread, they don't know what he's talking about. "Sir," they said, "always give this bread." We don't know what it is, but it sounds pretty good. Then Jesus declared, now here's where he starts to lose them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and still you do not believe. He's talking about hunger, thirst, and now he's talking about belief. There's a connection here. He knew exactly what he was talking about. All whom the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of the one who sent me. And this is the will of the one who sent me, that I shall lose none of all those he has given me, but raise them up at the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise them up at the last day. Pretty nice speech. Sounds good. Did they understand it? I don't really think so. At this, the Jews began to grumble about him because he said, I am the bread that came down from heaven. They said, is this not Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How can he now say, I came down from heaven? He's starting to lose him here. Bread was good, but all this other stuff, this spiritual stuff, heaven? Stop grumbling among yourselves, Jesus answered. No one can come to me unless the Father who has sent me draws them, and I will raise them up at the last day. It is written in the prophets, they will be taught by God. Everyone who has heard the Father and learned from him comes to me. No one has seen the Father except the one who is from God. Now he's talking about a lot of spiritual concepts here. Only he has seen the Father. Very truly I tell you, whoever believes has eternal life. I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which the people may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread, and now he's going to finally give them something they can hang on to, because they're lost here. How many of you are lost a little bit here? They've lost a lot of stuff, and it's kind of going right like this. That's certainly the way it was with these folks he was talking to. This bread is my flesh, which I give for the life of the world. Well, now we can hang on to this, and it sounds gross. Then the Jews began to argue sharply among themselves, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? They've missed the whole rest of this whole thing, and now there's just this last thing he says about his flesh and eating it. All of a sudden, we have something to grab onto, and we're not too sure what he's talking about here, but it has something to do with things. And now he's going to drive the point home. And before we get there, if they were to take this literally, what would this mean? If he were to literally give them his flesh, what's the word for that?
Cannibalism.
I cheated. You cheated. I gave you the word beforehand. But this would be cannibalism. And this is what some of these people are thinking. How can this man give us his flesh to eat? These were not highly spiritual people. These were just ordinary folk. When they hear, I'm going to give my flesh to eat, they're thinking of cannibalistic rituals. I've heard even today skeptics saying, you know, these Christians are cannibals. I can't go with cannibals. Because if we were to take this literally, that would be what it is. Now, he doesn't let them off the hook at all. And now I'm going to get into the part that we read earlier, where he just drives the point home. And then we're going to talk about why is he doing this. Jesus said to them, very truly I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of the Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is real food and my blood is real drink. Already he's gone through it three times, just driving it home. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. He's not letting them off the hook at all. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your ancestors ate manna and died, but whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. He said this while teaching in the synagogue in Capernaum. So what are these people thinking out there? I don't know what to think. This is a strange saying. In fact, that's exactly where it goes. On hearing it, many of his disciples said, this is a hard teaching. Who can accept it? And that's the key question. Who can accept this teaching that we must eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood? Who can accept this? Aware that his disciples were grumbling about this, Jesus said to them, does this offend you? Then what if you see the Son of Man ascend to where he was before? And then he gives the key teaching, what he's been driving at all along. It is the spirit that gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. Now, that's a strange thing to say. Hasn't he just been saying all along, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood, and now he's saying the flesh counts for nothing? What the heck is this guy talking about? Sounds like he's contradicting himself. Make up your mind, Jesus. Do we have to eat the flesh or don't we? The Spirit gives life, the flesh counts for nothing. The words I have spoken to you, they are spirit and life. Yet there are some of you who do not believe. And we're going to skip a little bit here. So here is Jesus. He knows the minds and hearts of the crowd that's speaking to him. And he is reaching out to those who can hear the word. He is also consciously, in a sense, driving away those who will not hear the word. Those who will distort the word. Those who will not hear it from the perspective which he is reaching out for. He's just driven it home about the body and the blood. You must eat my flesh and drink my blood. And yet he's saying it's the spirit that gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. He's dividing brilliantly the people between those who are going to take the message literally, whose minds are in the material level, and will only be able to think when they hear eat flesh and drink blood, the literal cannibalistic gross rituals. He's driving those off. These people cannot hear the message that I have to give. And if they hear it, it will in fact be damaging because they will distort it, and it will make them worse than they were before. So he does not want them to continue listening if they're only going to take it on the material level. This was a whole new spiritual dispensation. It's the spirit that gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. He is weeding out and pulling out those who can listen to him on a higher level, who can see the internal meaning, the spiritual meaning, as we Swedenborgians would say, of the literal symbols of the literal flesh and blood. The spirit gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. And then it says, from this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. And he said to the 12, you don't plan to leave me also, do you? Simon Peter answered him, Lord, to whom should we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and to know that you are the Holy One of God. So the ones who were able to stay with him were the ones that could see that he has the words of eternal life. The ones who had simply eaten the bread and eaten the fish and were coming to him for bread, they were not looking for eternal bread. They were looking for physical bread. And that was not the bread that he most wanted to give them. He wanted to give them the spiritual bread, the bread that leads to eternal life, the bread that feeds the soul. And yet, although he was sending away what I'm calling the headhunters, the ones who can only look at the physical, he was also sending away the head trippers. He was sending away the ones who were going to make it all theoretical. We're going to say all you have to do is believe and understand and be spiritually enlightened. You don't have to actually do anything. He was sending those away also because he was using a very physical symbol. Blood, flesh, bread, wine. And we must remember that, as a matter of fact, when he gave the disciples, as in the words that we'll hear in a few minutes, when he gave the disciples the Last Supper, he gave them bread and wine. He did not literally give them his flesh and blood. And no matter what the Catholics say, I don't believe that we're literally eating the flesh and drinking the blood of Christ when we take communion. We are, in fact, if we're open to it, bringing in the spiritual bread, the bread of life, the bread that gives us spiritual life. And yet, he wanted us to know that this is not a theoretical thing. God's love is not an abstract. God's love is something solid and substantial. In the image of the flesh, in the image of the bread, we are taking in the substance of God, and that is solid. We know when we share love with another person, it is not theoretical. It is substantial. It's substantial as the food that we share with each other. It's as substantial as the hugs that we give to each other, as the pressing of a hand. This is God's flesh. This is the very substance of God, this love that we are taking in when our heart is open to it. And the drink is not theoretical, abstract truth. All Swedenborgians who studied a little bit know the bread corresponds to love, the wine corresponds to truth. And it does correspond in the sense that it responds to the solid realities of God's love and wisdom. When we garner and gain the answer to our questions, the satisfaction of our thirst, those difficult questions that we face, why did my daughter have to die? Why did my spouse have to leave? Why did I have to become sick unto death? Why are these things happening? Why are there wars? These are questions that tug at us, that tear at us. And when we gain some insight, some satisfaction, some understanding of why God would allow these things to happen, It's not theoretical. It's something that satisfies our thirst for the knowledge of the Lord and his ways. So he was confounding both the headhunters, those who were only going to pay attention to the physical, and the head trippers, the ones who it's going to be all theoretical. We're going to learn all this theoretical theory, all these doctrines, and then we're going to be the super spiritual. No, it's the ones who accept it solidly into the heart and express it and share it with one another. These are the ones who have truly accepted the Lord's body and blood. These are the ones who have accepted the flesh of divine love, the blood of divine wisdom.